ready to testify. At that point, if he could give it to one of our committee assistants, and they will distribute the testimony to the committee members. Because of the number of people who want to testify, we're going to be limiting testimony. I'll be signaling you from my position here when you have 1 minute to go in your testimony. And at the point where you see the sign time, if you could try to finish your sentence or your thought, and then leave some time for other people to testify. Thank you.
Yes, that, we're trying to limit testimony now to 3 minutes, except the for the sponsors and the there'll be except for invited witnesses who have some explanations to give in terms of the legal issues involved, which may take a little longer. But I would ask that the if you all want to testify, this is a special hearing, and we've allocated this committee has been meeting since 3 o'clock, and we've allocated an hour to this particular bill, so you can see that it's going to take a little cooperation on everyone's part if you're all going to say something. If you have written testimony, you understand that we read that testimony, so it's not really necessary if you have it in writing that it be read. And that'll help us too with the time. So, Senator Simmons.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Judiciary Committee, Senator Jim Simmons from Washington County, we have what we hope is a very strong case to present tonight, showing, among other things, the incidents, the widespread incidents of child pornography in Oregon, and the inadequacy of the present Oregon statutes making it possible to prosecute these cases. So I have several people here that will come briefly and from their expertise give you an idea of what the problem is and how Senate Bill 364 will hopefully solve that problem. First, I would like to ask Major Bob Brekeen of the Criminal Division of the Oregon State Police and Detective Gregory Williford of the Oregon State Police to be the first on the team.
Brekeen, Criminal Investigation Bureau Department of State Police, here to offer testimony in support of Senate Bill 364. I have with me Detective Greg Williford from our Portland office, who's been in an interagency task force since March 1985, for the purpose of examining areas of sexual exploitation of children and child pornography. We feel that effort has discovered the following. One, Oregon criminal statutes do not control the problem of this form of deviancy. Two, it is a crime that is silent, one that society does not realize exists to the degree it does. Three, for every person identified as having an interest in child pornography, it is believed that there could be many yet unidentified. Four, there is a direct relationship between those persons that have an interest in child pornography and sexual exploitation of children physically. You have the rest of my testimony, and with your permission at this time, I would ask the committee to permit Detective Wilford to speak on the findings of the task force.
All right, Major, thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Greg Williford, and I have been a law enforcement officer with the Department of State Police for the last 8 years. For the last 3.5 years, I have been assigned as a detective with the Criminal Investigation Bureau out of the Portland Patrol Office, assigned to general criminal assignments. During my first year of investigating general crime, I noted among my own caseload and also my colleagues that it seems that increasingly the majority of our casework dealt with crimes involving the sexual exploitation of children, mostly cases that were referred to us from Children's Services Division. After a year of gaining expertise in that area, I continued and tried a different investigative approach, one that was covert and undercover in nature, to examine the areas of child pornography and that form of sexual exploitation among children. And by undercover and covert, I mean actual attempts to make contact with people in the state of Oregon that have interests in that form of sexual exploitation with kids, child pornography. I started off with an intelligence list of 15 residents in the state of Oregon that belonged to an underground group that believed in adult-child sexual relationships, and basically it was a pedophile support group. The type of undercover work that we have done with that list and additional cases is by the mails, telephone, or even in-person contacts, dealing as a person undercover that has the same type of sexual preferences and desires with children, involving children. Since we began, the 15 has increased to an intelligence list now of people in the state of Oregon that we believe have similar interests of over 150. We have also put test ads in adult publications looking for those that have interests in adult child sexual relationships and child pornography. To give you an example and a breakdown that I did on some responses of those, in a 4-month period, we had 12 residents in the state of Oregon respond to a test ad, and they were indicating that they were looking for this kind of material, child pornography. We had 2 additional cases at that time, and that made a total of 14. Of those 14, all of them were interested through their correspondence to me in adult child sexual relationships. 9 of those 14 indicated to me that they had had a past sexual involvement with a child. 8 of the 14 indicated to me that they had currently a child pornography collection of some form. 7 of those 14 wanted to obtain child pornography or add to their current collection. Only 1 of the 14 was selling child pornography. That one person that is still selling, or that was selling then, is still selling now because of the inadequate law. I can't seem to his behavior and activity in selling this kind of material is not a crime in the state of Oregon the way that it's being done.
Right, just can I interrupt you just a minute? Can you help me a little bit on that?
Sure.
Of course, the present child pornography law, which this committee worked on the last session and put on the books, would make it criminal offense to sell what you're talking about. So you have to kind of help me as to the situation, if you
sure.
would.
Let me focus that in on that for you. He is selling this material, but the problem I have in applying the criminal statute to that behavior is that I cannot prove where the stuff is coming from, whether it was produced against the laws of this state or whether it came in against the laws of the United States. He's not telling me. He is just selling it. He is a registered sex offender from out of state involving a juvenile boy. After that occurred to him, he moved into this state, and evidence from the old case, the out-of-state case, indicated he had the same kind of material and was also selling down there. That case has been ongoing for about a year now. It looks like I believe that we may have to look, or we will be looking at federal involvement in that case. Let me further focus on why I've had a problem in the last 2 years with a covert approach, and that is with the statutes of 163, 675, and 680. And it's the language that I have hard to get the essential elements to cause a state arrest. And it deals with the exchange of something of value in the exchange of the material. And of course, what I just mentioned in that is where the material came from. I think most commonly I see in my investigative experience with these people is that there are those that will exchange, or there's a commercial element sometimes, but there's also a large part that we appear to miss by having that kind of wording. They will just oftentimes give you child pornography. I've received material from these people, but they don't want anything in return. And I just wrapped up a case federally that was almost 2 years, and there was evidence of sexual exploitation with this person's daughter. And there was nothing that we could do on a state case in that, because of the wording, he didn't want anything in return. He just sent out pictures of his daughter and also commercially produced child pornography. He was relating to me as a person he thought shared his sexual identity. Those are the two problems that I have seen as far as an enforcement aspect. Of the cases that I have worked, I've only been aware of two situations where there was indictments or arrest warrants issued. One was in Wallowa County, and one was a case that I had in Multnomah County. The Wallowa County case went federal, so the warrant was apparently returned, and then the Multnomah County case, as far as I know, is still pending. I'm not aware of any other arrest of that statute in the state, and I have certainly had my problems in trying to enforce that. In this area, I think I have discovered a deviant subculture that does exist in the state, and it's residents of the state that come from all walks of life. And that's been just, I think, a minor glimpse. It's not been a full-time effort in looking at it, and I've had some real problems with it. I believe that the solution to that is seen in Senate Bill 364. And I urge you to work with this Senate bill, and as respected lawmakers and people that have the ability to make positive historic change, and to pass it out a committee for the future protection and safety of Oregon's children.
All right. Anything further, Senator Simmons?
Yes. Our next gentleman I'd like to call is Mr. Peter Shannon from the Emerald Center for Behavioral Change in Eugene.
I'd like to express my appreciation for the invitation to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 364. My associates and I represent 18 years of experience working with sexual aggressors, and currently at the Emerald Center in Eugene, we have approximately 90 pedophiles and other sexual aggressors in therapy with their families as well. I've got three pages of testimony that are for your perusal that will be coming around, and what I'd like to do is highlight the page and a half or so that I think is the most important. This should take approximately 4 minutes.
All right, sir, go ahead.
And I'll read directly from the text. The following discussion will attempt to show how child pornography is utilized as a vehicle to induce deviant sexual arousal. The purpose is to provide an understanding of the motivational foundation by which deviant sexual gratification can be achieved through masturbation to orgasm or acting out through sexual aggression. In general, the use of both adult and child pornography has similar themes regarding intent and outcome. With this in mind, their specific reference in the discussion is interchangeable. We flip to page 2. Second paragraph, child pornography is used to stimulate deviant sexual arousal to children. This fuels the process for masturbation, which through orgasm reinforces the value of that pornography. It also reinforces deviant fantasy imagery associated with the pornography, either explicitly portrayed or conjured in the mind. This reinforces the legitimacy of the themes and activity occurring in this imagery. This becomes dangerous when we think of the relationship between giving oneself permission to masturbate to deviant fantasy and enacting the fantasy itself. The likelihood of this activity occurring in the community increases. Pornography makes objects out of live human beings. These flat, one-dimensional images slowly condition perpetrators to view the real people as tools for their gratification. This process that we call objectification allows perpetrators to dehumanize people and treat them as if they were less than worthy of decent conduct. The use of pornography in masturbation teaches the offender to be self-oriented in fulfilling his needs. Little thought is given to the other person because there is no other one involved. This becomes a deviant substitute to appropriate and responsible sexual gratification enjoyed between two people. In this process, the desire and ability to communicate with age-appropriate partners in consenting ways becomes less and less. This internally trained focus on meeting one's own needs conditions them to be insensitive to the needs of others, and over time they acquire an uncanny ability to devalue the rights of others. The continued use of pornography and masturbation further entrenches this. The behavior theory of learning states that people learn through conditioning, that we work to experience rewards and satisfaction, and that we are more likely than not to repeat certain behaviors in certain situations if we've received positive reinforcement for it. Instrumental or operant condition is the process of learning behavior that orchestrates the stimulus response and reward of any particular experience. In this way, sexual activity is the same. Typically, we respond to sexual arousal by engaging in some form of sexual activity. If the activity is pleasurable, we are likely to utilize this the next time if available to gratify our needs. Same is true for masturbation with pornography and deviant sexual assault. If we experience sexual arousal and choose to masturbate with child pornography, the ensuing orgasm rewards this experience and increases the likelihood that the offender will repeat it again. Repetition strengthens the link between the child, sexual gratification, and sexual gratification in the offender's mind. The process of masturbating to deviant themes increases the likelihood that the behavior will increase and occur through this training process. In the mind of child molesters, the very existence of child pornography legitimizes the theme of children as sexual objects to be used for their sexual gratification. Its presence validates their distorted values and belief systems and externally supports their continued sexual assault. Where there is a photo of a child in an explicit sexual pose or activity, there is also a victim of sexual assault. The more we avoid doing everything within our means to stop this, the more we give our permission for child pornography and sexual assault to continue. There is also discussion on the biological or biochemistry addiction to pornography and sexual offending, and that's presented in the text on page 3 as well. But I, for the sake of time, will delete it from my discussion.
All right. Thank you.
Next, Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Mrs. Bonnie Griswold, a Washington County parole officer, to come.
I am Bonnie Griswold, a probation officer supervising 40 sex offenders in the community. My experience also includes 10 years as a caseworker for Children's Services Division, working with families and children. I am also presently a member of the Oregon Child Protection Task Force. These experiences have brought to light for me the ever-increasing problem of child exploitation and, of course, the aftermath effects of sexual abuse. I know all of you are well aware of the obvious effects of child exploitation. Child victims can suffer from fear, humiliation, anger, depression, and confusion. These feelings can be expressed in a variety of physical and emotional symptoms. Coupled with the added elements of photography or the use of child pornography, the problems of the victim are compounded. Children see the pictures as a permanent connection to the abusive situation, even if the actual physical event or events is completed. As you can imagine, the abuse can be continued in their minds as long as they know that the pictures exist. In all the cases with which I have worked, these victims are fearful that others will see these pictures and that they, the victims, will be recognized. Even years later, these victims are afraid that the photographs will be uncovered. I recently received a call from a young woman who was exploited about 2 years ago. She had learned of the arrest of one of my clients, the man who had offended her. She asked me to go to his house and get the pictures and destroy them. And she was devastated when I told her I was unable to do this. After approximately 10 years' time, she is still afraid that she will be recognized if the pictures are found. I did not tell her that there is a strong likelihood that some of these photographs may have been given to other pedophiles as gifts or traded for other photographs of victims. These offenders share these pictures freely. They do not expect anything of value in return. These photographs are a history of an abuse and evidence of a crime. A picture of this nature cannot be taken without a child being sexually exploited. Offenders use these photographs repeatedly. They recall to the offender the abusive event. It feeds their deviant fantasies and their distorted thinking. This use becomes further abuse of the victim. The photographs are the grossest example of the offender's thinking and his activity. The child victim is no longer a human being to the offender. They become objects to be used and abused by the offender. I've seen pictures of victims from the ages of a few months to late adolescence, boys as well as girls. The victims may be related to the offender, or the victim may know the offender as a family acquaintance, friend, or neighbor. Whatever the circumstances, the offender is able to groom the victim and to set up the situation where the offense takes place. Over the past 3 years, I have learned that sex offenders do use sexually explicit material in their offending cycle. Child molesters, especially those who are pedophiles, are very likely to keep the photographic histories of the individual victims as well as the individual events of abuse to a victim. Their collection of material will also include commercially made magazines, newspapers, and videos. They may also make their own material by combining sexually explicit material with pictures of their victims or pictures of children they know or have cut out of commercial publications. And I presently have an offender who spent a great deal of time explaining to me how he combined sexually explicit material that he got in another area with pictures of victims and children from catalogs and pictures of children that he didn't necessarily know. With the passage of this bill, Oregonians will be better able to protect their children. Children of all ages and backgrounds can be exploited. They need your protection. Failing to pass this bill can only result in further victimization of our children.
You're represented on this Child Protection Task Force are several agencies, including the federal agencies, U.S. Customs, Postal Inspection, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Roger Bruckner from the Customs Service is here this evening to give us his aspect.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Roger Bruckner, a special agent with the United States Customs Service assigned to the resident, agent in charge, Portland, Oregon, and current child pornography coordinator. I've been with U.S. Customs for the past 10 years, specializing in the interdiction of narcotics and child pornography. I'm a charter member of the Oregon Child Protection Task Force. I came here today to speak on behalf of U.S. Customs regarding the pornographic exploitation and sexual abuse of children. Customs Service offices are located at more than 300 ports of entry along the land and sea borders of the United States. There are 23 major mail facilities, including those in Los Angeles, Oakland, and Seattle. The Customs Task includes the enforcement of over 400 statutes for approximately 40 different federal agencies. Customs responsibility for interdicting all contraband, including pornography, imported into the United States. 5 years ago, the Customs Service began an intensive crackdown on the illegal importation of pornography. On March 28, 1983, U.S. Commissioner of Customs William Von Raab addressed a meeting at the White House between President Reagan, several top government officials, and an anti-pornography coalition. At the meeting, Commissioner Von Raab pledged strong action against the foreign importation of pornography.
more vigorous investigations of serious anti-obscenity law violations was ordered. The Sexual Exploitation of Children Act, Public Law 98-292, signed by President Reagan in 1984, significantly eased Customs' ability to seize any sexual explicit items regarding children and increase the fines and penalties of those who violate the laws. Customs seizures of all types of illegal pornography have risen dramatically. Customs agents, in cooperation with the Postal Service, are now following seizures of child pornography to their intended recipients and executing search warrants. A significant number of importers of illegal pornography, especially child pornography, are now facing federal and state criminal charges, not only for the importation of child pornography, but also for child molestation. Nationally, 3/4 of the customs search warrants executed for child pornography violations turn up evidence that the recipient of the pornographic article was involved in child molestations. While customs seizures have led to the arrest of school teachers, child psychologists, Boy Scout leaders, and people with prior records for child molesting, the recipients of child pornography represent persons from virtually all walks of life. State and local police play a vital role alerting to possible child molesters and following up child molestation cases developed as a result of federal search warrants. Since October 1984, Customs has seized 1,019 child pornography articles imported into this country. 42 of these seizures were destined for residences in Oregon. There have been about 12 federal search warrants executed in Oregon as a direct result of those seizures. The Oregon search warrants have resulted in the additional seizures of more than 600 pounds of child pornography materials, including video cassettes, magazines, and photographs. In 1985, a U.S. Customs undercover investigation initiated in the state of Illinois identified a subject residing in the state of Oregon who was producing and reproducing sexually explicit material depicting the sexual exploitation of children. The subject was subsequently arrested and convicted. In 1986, it was brought to the attention of the U.S. Customs Service by Oregon State Police that a subject in Eastern Oregon was in possession of and receiving pornographic material detailing the sexual exploitation of children. In addition, the OSP alleged that the subject had previously sexually molested his 13-year-old stepdaughter. As a result of the joint investigation initiated by U.S. Customs and OSP, a federal search warrant was executed on the subject's rustic cabin in the Eastern Oregon wilderness. Approximately 30 pounds of sexually explicit materials detailing the sexual mutilation of young children was seized and the subject was arrested. The subject ultimately pleaded guilty and was convicted. Also in 1986, Customs intercepted a magazine depicting children engaged in various sexual acts with adults. As a result of executing a search warrant on the subject's house, pornographic evidence was found of this individual molesting children. Our investigation revealed that the addressee in Oregon had been attempting to adopt children. In conclusion, I'm pleased to report that we believe we are beginning to have a significant impact on the illegal importation of those materials. And more importantly, we are putting the criminals who abuse our children behind bars. Thank you very much for this opportunity to provide the federal perspective. I hope it is of some help in your consideration for Senate Bill 364.
Thank you. Senator
Weyers. Did you mention whether you wanted us to ask questions during the testimony?
Mr. Chair, the customs regulations would prevent Mr. Bruckner from answering questions. There is a representative of the federal government here who will be able to answer questions for you a little later.
All right, thank you. Well, no, I didn't mention it, Senator, but and of course I wouldn't want to unduly restrict the committee members if they felt they had to ask a question. I would suggest perhaps that we just hear from the witnesses. Well, it gives us a chance to hear from more of them.
I only wanted to ask him a brief question to repeat something he said, that he was testifying rapidly, which I think we all appreciated, but I wasn't sure I understood one thing he said. So
go ahead.
It's written right here. I'm sorry, I didn't see that. He said something about how many, I'm sure I can dig it out of here, how many examples, times there have been male child pornography seized.
In the United States, there's been 1,019 just child pornography alone. That's not including pornography, and 42 of those of that material has been destined for here, for Oregon. I'm sorry.
listed for Oregon?
For Oregon, for the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have district attorneys from three levels here to testify as to the adequacy or inadequacy of Oregon's law. The first one is from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, Jeff Jones.
My name's Jeff Jones. I'm a senior deputy district attorney in Multnomah County. I've worked in the district attorney's office for almost 6 years. Currently, I'm assigned to the drug unit. For 14 months, I prosecuted sex offenders within the Sex Crimes Bureau of our office. My comments dovetail with Detective Williford's, which is to somewhat graphically illustrate the inadequacies of the current law by stating that I personally have not prosecuted anyone under the current statute. I spoke with two members of our office who are the only people in our office to have cases pending under the current law. The reason for this, according to them, is because of two segments of ORS 163-680. First, the wording to pay or give anything of value has been to them something.
And also probably serve better to deal with the people who are engaging in this behavior. The psychologist testified about the people who are currently in therapy. It seems to me that the expenditure of funds and the treatment of these people is in fact more likely to be effective in dealing with the problem than incarcerating them to the extent that you do successfully prosecute them, so that eventually they get back out and once again engage in the behavior. I think that the complexity of this issue at this stage is not something that can allow the development of legislation that will satisfy constitutional concerns, state or federal, and that an interim approach to this is, I think, the most reasonable solution. I'm committed to spending the time to do whatever can be done to address the problem, because I'm as concerned about protecting children as the people here. But I think it can be done consistently with the Constitution, and I'm willing to spend the time to do that. But I think it's something that's going to require months of careful work.
All right.
If there are no questions.
Well, I think, yes, I do have a question. There's no question about the fact that the committee would not want to I think I speak for all the members of the committee. We certainly don't want to draft something that's not going to be constitutional. That certainly isn't any way for the legislature to act. But the question I've got to you is, Stanley versus Georgia opinion of the U.S. Supreme Court, the way I read the case, it's indicated that obscene material, the mere possession of obscene material without more could not be successfully prosecuted under the First Amendment. Am I right so far?
Yes.
All right, then, in your opinion, in spite of what change we might make in the Oregon Constitution, do you think that the mere possession of obscenity, I mean, assuming that we amend the Oregon Constitution and pass the statute accordingly, which made illegal a mere possession of this material, would stand up under a U.S. Supreme Court review after that Griffin versus Georgia case?
I don't believe it would. And I've got a case, United States versus Miller, under the federal statute, 776 F. 2nd 978, an 11th Circuit case in 1985, that dealt with a challenge under Stanley to a person who had child pornography, and the court emphasized that Stanley has not been eliminated, even in this area. Yet Stanley has been made narrowed, if you want to call it that, but it's been made clear that Stanley only relates to possession, not the acquisition of the material. If you can establish that they acquired it and punish them for the acquisition of it, you can go ahead and do that, but you must show that they acquired it. And the court, at least in the 11th Circuit case, made clear that they weren't dealing with Stanley. They accepted Stanley, but said that what mattered there was the acquisition of it. So the fact that some state courts have addressed the issue, to me, doesn't really indicate very much, because a number of state courts have done some very strange things. I truly don't think State versus Henry and the state constitution is the impediment that is going to create problems here in terms of the definitional changes that they want, in terms of the criminalization of possession. And it's why I think a civil approach, which could well allow the seizure of material, at least as I've envisioned it, and the bringing of actions against the people with the material, seeking substantial damages as great as any criminal penalties can be imposed, for the invasion of privacy of the children involved, and the possibility of the state being the plaintiff on behalf of children under some sort of parens matriae would be just as good, theory of state ability to act on behalf of citizens and other people. And so I think it's possible to deal with the possession issue in a way that will be constitutional. At least that's the thought that's occurred to me, and I'm willing to try to develop that. And I think the issues of how much money needs to be expended to deal with this issue, whether we need more people investigating, more people addressing the problems of the people. I mean, to talk about one undercover officer for the state police, maybe we need 20 undercover officers for the state police. Maybe we need to spend more money. I always think we do. When there's a problem, we need to spend money to deal with it. And I think an interim study could well develop completely constitutional answers to the problem that are as effective as anything that's proposed by Senate Bill 364, and that would deal with this problem, again, a problem about which I care as much as anyone here.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's... Well, obviously, we're going to have to extend this a little bit, aren't we? We've already gone past the hour, but we'll do that. We'll see how far we can get now, and I guess I'd certainly like to have everybody be able to say everything that everyone wants, but you can tell right away that we all can't stay up all night around here. So let's see how we go here. I'll call David Romanek. David Romanek. Is he here?
Right here.
All right, sir, come up here.
I don't
have any. All right, thank you very much. Now, that's something else. If there are a lot of you that of course, share the same views, maybe you're in the same groups. If you think that somebody has stated your viewpoint or expressed a point of view for your group, and you want to kind of concede your time to somebody else, that would be appreciated, too. So if I call a name and don't feel like you're obligated, come up here. I suppose the same thing is true of Mrs. Romanek. Is that right? All right. Thank you, Mrs. Romanek. Jeanette Lule, is she here? All right. Did you want to testify? All right. Thank you. And Lorraine, she's here too, and she feels the same way, apparently. Okay. Paul DePerry.
Jim? Members of the committee. My name is Paul DePerry. I represent Multnomah County Citizens Against Pornography. And the brief statement I had written out here hinged on the Stanley versus Georgia and New York versus Ferber situations, and I do have notations for those members of the committee that are interested. The primary thing I think I wanted to point out was that Stanley versus Georgia itself said, nor do we mean to express any opinion on statutes making criminal possessions of other types of printed, filmed, or recorded materials. And Stanley versus Georgia dealt explicitly with adult pornography. I don't think that the right of child pornographers to have their smut was something for which our forebears fought and bled. And regardless of the opinions of, you know, certain other groups, but the thing I think that's important to understand is that child pornography is evidence of a crime. I can't think of any place where it's legal to do this sort of thing, and it may not have been produced in this state, but it is evidence, and nobody has any business having that evidence. And it's also a continued abuse for those children who and adults who know that these pictures are still in circulation. And our failure, any failure to stand now on this issue, will make us culpable, will make us responsible for these perverts continuing to destroy these children. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Peggy Harrelson.
My name is Peggy Harrelson, and I'm chairman of the Oregon Citizens for Decency Through Law, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 364. In June of 83, the Canadian Committee on Sexual Offenses Against Children undertook the most exhaustive content analysis ever done of pornography, and the study found that characteristic of the sexually explicit depictions of children and youth is a description of acts of this kind as though they constituted normal sexual behavior in which children became involved. In most of these situations, they found that the children and youth are portrayed as either passive novices who are being tutored about sexual behavior, or more often they are cast as eager and active participants who willingly have intercourse with adults. Sex offenders claim that society has betrayed them when with one hand it offers them a smorgasbord of these legitimatizing images, and then with the other hand punishes them when they act out the behaviors portrayed and depicted. This indicates to me that we definitely need to have stronger laws showing them that they not only cannot do what they've done, but they can't possess those materials or provide them for others to possess, particularly when people who are involved in child pornography use those same materials in order to perpetrate their preferences. They use them in order to victimize other children. There are those individuals who appear sexually interested in children, but whose sexual interest is mostly secondary. They're mainly interested in weak and vulnerable victims, principally children. Gender is unimportant. What they in essence seek, according to psychiatrist Ismund Rosen, is a cruelty relationship. Each year, 1.8 million children run away from home. Once on the street, their chances of being victimized jumps from 40% at home to 85%. A loose network of compulsive sexual victimizers and sadists look for dependency and cruelty relationships, and these kinds of relationships are perpetrated and applauded in child pornography. In recent years, more than 1 million children have been photographed in sexually explicit poses or while engaging voluntarily or involuntarily in sexual acts with adults or with other children. The findings of these studies challenge the view that commercial child pornography is primarily Scandinavian in origin and subsequently imported into this country, when they found that the 11 most widely distributed pornography materials in Canada were in fact distributed from the United States. With their psychological defenses overwhelmed, record numbers of our young people are committing suicide or murdering other adolescents. The U.S. Surgeon General recently stated that acts of social violence have reached epidemic proportion. It's important that we enact laws that are going to allow our children to have a society that they can live and grow in, that will help them to become better citizens, not put them in a position where they have to worry about being victims. There are at least 1.3 million cases of abuse and neglect each year. That adds up to 5,000 that die from this abuse. Child abuse experts argue that the 1.3 million figure should in fact be doubled. I hope that you will take into consideration all those things that you have heard today. I've spent the last 4 years studying extensively the impact of pornography, and particularly child pornography, on our society. And the things that I have found have overwhelmed me and those that I've presented my materials to. I appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Francis Rath, please.
I believe that my material is somewhat repetitive.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rath.
Former testimony, so I would like to just present the printed.
Thank you very much. That would be helpful if you do that. Stella Neal. All right, thank you, Ms. Neal. Rosalie Johnson. All right, thank you. Regina Scheidler.
Mr. Chairman, I represent Silverton Montangel Right to Life, maybe a small group, but we are very mighty in the work that's being done. I also represent the Catholic Daughters from Montangel. Many of the members are here tonight, at least 20 came over. We favor Senate Bill 364 because children do need protection before and after birth. Protection under this bill, as I was going through before listening to all the testimony, I did take some notes. And to make it really sort of brief, Jim Collins, I think, the Assistant Attorney General, really hit on many of the points I would have said had I been granted the time. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. So I take it you speak on behalf of all the 20 that came over here?
I hope so.
All right.
Yes, they both are members of the Right to Life Silverton Montangel and the Catholic Daughters of America,
good.
The Montangel chapter.
Appreciate
thank
that.
You.
Thanks very much. Is Maureen Bosler, did she want to testify? Did I pronounce that right? B-O-C-H-S-L-E-R? Mrs. Boxler, did you? All right, thank you. She's here from SIL. And Steve Golden. All right, sir. Are you all right? Things are going quite well, wouldn't you say, folks? Here, I know that most all of you are of one mind, and I appreciate the fact that you're willing to allow others to kind of speak on your behalf. Is Sherry Rogaski. All right.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I have a letter I would like to share with you. Dear senators and members of the community, I'm writing this letter because I want to share with you what I experienced during the time I was in Holland recently. I'm a Christian and a wife and a mother of a 3-year-old daughter. I've been back from Holland for about 3 weeks now, and what I saw while I was there very much disturbed me. On their normal public TV and in their average magazines, they are exploiting children to advertise commercial products. They show new children in bathtub scenes to advertise bath products like shampoo, soap, bubble bath, etc. Nobody that lives over there seems to think anything of it. They are conditioned to accept it as normal. To give you an example, one of the magazine ads in a fashion magazine showed a full-page advertisement with a picture of a smiling little girl who was around the age of 5 or 6 standing upright in a large bathtub holding a personal shower fixture in her hand as she sprayed herself with it. In the corner of the tub sat a nude man with his back to the viewer as he watched this little girl play. This ad was for a bath product, and as I looked at this naked child, I felt outraged that she had been exploited in this way for the purpose of selling a product for profit. I felt very shocked and angry because I also have a little girl close to that same age, and I can't imagine her being used in such a way for some company's financial gain. This was not a rare exception in what I saw while I was over there. Children, mainly little girls, are being used in this way to make money in Europe. Even on normal public television commercials, I saw much of the same. It is well known that Europe is a trendsetter in our world today. Is this use of children for advertisement the trend that we in America here in the state of Oregon want to follow? I'm hoping by sharing this we can avoid letting our children be hurt and used as sexual objects for lust and money. We need to crack down on child pornography now. Hopefully Oregon will take heed from what is going on in Holland and other parts of Europe that have embraced a very lax sexual attitude, especially towards their own children. This, no doubt, is why child sexual abuse in Europe is rampant. It is an ever-increasing problem over there. So what should we do now because of what we have learned? Well, first, as Americans, and second, as Oregonians, we need to take a stand and become responsible in protecting our children from being abused through child pornography. This is why I ask you to please support and get behind Senate Bill 364. Let's get together for the sake of our children so that America, and specifically our own state of Oregon, do not slip into a future that reflects what is going on in Holland and Europe today. Thank you.
Olga Garber. Or is it Olga? Ms. Garber, is she gone? No, she's here.
I mailed my testimony in.
Yes.
My name is Olga Garber. I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 364. I feel Oregon needs SB 364 to protect our children and to lessen crime. As a parent, I am brokenhearted and enraged at the thought of the poor children used in making this abhorrent pornography, and the children who will be victimized because some pedophile is emboldened by such literature. And I use the term loosely. Child pornography is vile, despicable, and totally without any redeeming value. There is no excuse for making, distributing, or having such perverted trash. I strongly object to child pornography, not only for what it is, but also for what it does to the beholder. The report to the Attorney General on child pornography noted, in interviews with a great many police officers, we were frequently told, I never arrested a child molester who did not have pornography in his possession. Also, a Los Angeles Police Department investigation studied over 40 child molestation cases during a five-month period and interviewed more than 100 victims and suspects. Pornography was found to be present in every case. We are all familiar with our First Amendment right to free speech, but we need to remember that this is not an absolute right. As the saying goes, my freedom ends where your nose begins. I cannot libel, slander, or shout fire in crowded places because I will hurt others thereby. Similarly, child pornography hurts our whole society, especially children. The myth of a cute, harmless, little, dirty old man has to be laid to rest. Child pornography is addictive, with the addict craving ever more depraved material. Pedophiles are desensitized. Rather than viewing a child as a human being to be protected and nurtured, they exploit children as sex objects and worse. I'm not asking you to pass SB 364 merely because I find child pornography repugnant and offensive. Statistics irrefutably demonstrate that where child pornography flourishes, as current Oregon law allows it to, violent crime, prostitution, and drug abuse increase. The corresponding lower moral climate is not conducive to family values. I love my children, as do the vast majority of Oregonians, and want them to grow up in a safe society. Oregon needs SB 364 to protect our future. We appreciate you giving this bill your maximum support.
Bernice, is it Diker or Deeker? Did she want to testify? Yes, thank you. Let's see. Jonathan Garber? Did you wish to add anything, sir?
Well, I just want to concur with what my wife said.
I thought you would say that. That's why I called you. All right.
I would like to have Dr. Jim Hope speak on my behalf, if he would.
No, surely. She signed up?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, fine. All right, sir, come on up here.
I brought my testimony in yesterday. So.
Yes, and we've had that file now.
Thank you. I'm Dr. James B. Hogue of the Citizens for Decency Through Law, Salem chapter, and we earnestly ask for your help and support for this badly needed bill, Senate Bill 364. Children of the helpless victims of savage, child-destroying degenerates, as you've been told. Normal man wants to protect children, but the child pornographer and his followers distort and twist the minds of children in their exploitation. Children disappear after the age when the children are routinely discarded for younger children. Only you can help these helpless children. We ask for your support. In the Henry decision, I might add, too, the court left open the matter of child pornography, indicating by suggestion that that was definitely not protected by the Constitution.
Judy Wagner. Well, I'm not going to do that because I'm trying to, I'm looking where people come from, and I like to kind of mix it up, and people, I'm trying to give some preference to people who are from out of town, for one thing, because I know you want to get home tonight. If you don't mind, I'd like to kind of do that. We have let's see now. Okay. How about Agnes Smith? Is Agnes Smith here? All right. And here's another person from out of town who might want to add something. Carol Piotz. Did I say that right?
Carol Piotz, my angel.
Yes.
I concur with Regina Sheeter and Senator Simmons. And I also want to say that I am a public school teacher and have been teaching for 24 years. I work mostly with 9 and 10-year-olds, and I urge the passage of the Senate bill. Okay.
I'm going to, now, if you want to make a statement, you're going to have to come up here because our sound equipment can't pick you up back there. It's only if you want to just concur or you don't want to go ahead and testify, you can indicate that from back there. But if you want to make a statement, I'd like to have you come up here and do it.
Should I come forward?
If you want to make a statement.
Yes, I would.
Carol Piotz from Mount Angel. I concur with the former speakers, Regina Sheeler, Senator Simmons. I'm a public school teacher, my 25th year of teaching experience. I work mostly with young people, 9 and 10-year-olds, and I urge the passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. See, we have a number from Mount Angel. I guess maybe we all came over in the same group, didn't you? Anella Jank, is she from Mount Angel also?
Yes, I also agree with these.
All right, thank you. And Jerry Beyer.
I also am from Mount Angel, and I also concur with Regina Sheeler and Carol Beyer.
Thank you, Ms. Beyer. And Alice Myotki, did I say that right? Oh, you don't have to have anything in writing if you want to make a statement. In fact, we prefer that people just speak without reading a script. So you go right ahead.
I find that...
Just tell us your name and where you're from.
Oh, my name is Alice Myotki, and I'm from Staten, Oregon. And I find it very interesting that we have all kinds of bills and legislation that prohibit people from having drugs and all types of things, but when it comes to our children, the most valuable thing that we have in the whole world, we can't legislate things that pertain to them, that pertain to their safety. And I just really would urge you to pass this bill.
Thank you for being here. Sandra Nelson.
My name is Sandra Nelson, and I'm from Beaverton. I'll edit what I have to say because a lot of what has already been said. I'm speaking on behalf of the 13,000 Oregonian Concerned Women for America who urge you to support Senate Bill 364. As Concerned Women for America, we are unequivocally opposed not only to child pornography, but to all kinds of pornography and obscenity, because of their detrimental effects on children, women, and men, marriage, and families. Pornography is a direct attack on significant relationships. Pornography's message is that human beings are only sexual objects to be used for one's own sexual gratification, apart from love, commitment, morality, and responsibility. We Concerned Women for America are in favor of freedom of speech, but only up to a point. That point, any point, presupposes a standard of excellence, a standard of right and wrong. Without such a standard, we become barbarians, enslaved to the passions and self-gratification of those in power. A standard of excellence is assumed in the powerful words engraved in this Capitol building. I quote, "The mind of man knows no employment more worthy of its power than the quest of righteousness in human affairs. no goal of its labors that is superior to the discovery of the good in the guidance of life. I conclude with a brief look at the term standard of excellence. To speak of a standard of excellence in the abstract is not very helpful. A quest of righteousness, the discovery of the good in the guidance of life, are noble-sounding phrases, but they remain empty, meaningless phrases until we give them meaning. Will our quest of righteousness and the discovery of the good lead us to encourage the violence and degradation of child pornography? Concerned Women for America urge us instead to seek righteousness and goodness in our Christian heritage. That is not causing government to establish religion. Rather, it is recognizing that the standard of excellence is not made by one man or even by a group of men. The standard has been made and given to us by God. Therefore, we urge this legislature to approve Senate Bill 364.
All right, thank you.
To those, one more sentence or two. To those who advocate child pornography, Concerned Women for America in Oregon encourage them to exchange their enslavement and addiction to pornography and whatever money it produces for the freedom and righteousness found in Jesus Christ. All of us, they and we, men, women, and children, would be a lot happier and healthier if they did. Thank you.
George Sahlstrom.
Mr. Chairman, members of the panel, for the record, my name is George Sahlstrom. I live in Albany, Oregon, and I'm the Benton County Director for Oregon Citizens Alliance. We're in support of Senate Bill 364 because while most citizens have left pornography alone, it has not left us alone. It invades our homes, our workplaces, and our communities. It is neither innocent nor vicarious, nor is it viewed for art's sake. It has become more obscene and with more gore with each passing year. Hardcore pornography promotes rape, violence, murder, child, and even baby molestation. It is a lie to believe that there is nothing that we can do about it. We can put a stop to it, and that is why we're here tonight. Another lie is that the lewd depictions of naked bodies singly portrayed or intertwined with others is innocent, that it has nothing to do with the epidemics of illicit pregnancy and abortion, teenage sex, the spread of venereal diseases, and the breakdown of fidelity in our homes. The Commission on Pornography, appointed by Edwin Meese, has exposed pornography and revealed its harmful effects on our society. It is used as an instrument of sexual abuse and harassment of women and children. For instance, a false impression of women is being conveyed to the user of pornography by depicting women enjoying being raped and tortured.